Hi, welcome to River Talk, the podcast that talks about everything river related, hosted by Zach Collier, Eric Weiseth, and me, Priscilla Macy. Today we'll be talking about general topic of mental health and well-being for both river guides and whitewater paddlers. Do we have any news of the week, Zach?
Yeah, I have one thing at least. And this is maybe self-promoting, but I'm going to do it anyway. I have this group called Kamiopsis Guides Association, and it's a very small, like, nonprofit thing. And we just started a new campaign called Save the South Kamiopsis. And there's a bunch of rivers and creeks in the South Kamiopsis that flow into either the Smith or the Illinois rivers. And we are about to have some really cool opportunities. And you know all about this, Priscilla, so chime in whenever you want. But we're about to have some opportunities to protect these rivers here pretty soon. And I feel like they lately have been underrepresented. And so I'm trying to just remind people that they exist, that they're special, and that when we go to protect some places in Oregon, that we really focus on these places in particular. So yeah. I just wrote an article about what the South Kamiopsis even is, and I'll put a link to it in the news section of the website if anybody wants to read about that.
Yeah, I think it's a great time to highlight the incredible recreation opportunity and contribute, like, how these streams contribute to water quality. And Southern Oregon is sometimes a place that doesn't always have a spotlight on it in terms of conservation, just because it's not a population center. But all these, particularly areas in the Illinois and Smith drainage, really could use some advocacy behind protections for the drainages. So the Wild and Scenic Rivers campaign that Zach and I have talked about in the past is one way to advocate for protections. But as Zach has mentioned before, there's also some specific advocacy that needs to be done for some of the streams in the South Kamiopsis to protect them from mining and development, which the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act wouldn't protect them entirely, because there's some boundary restrictions in terms of how far in the on the bank of the river the act actually works. So definitely read Zach's article, and I think him and I and others are planning to put out some posts on American Whitewater and other forums to explain why it's important to protect these streams and what streams they are.
Yeah. Thanks for adding that. And they are, it's the West Fork of the Illinois, Rough and Ready Creek, Baldface Creek, Josephine Creek, and Canyon Creek. And those are the ones that are really special. And they're all paddleable. They all have sections of whitewater that are really cool. Some of them have difficult access, and some of them, are super rain dependent. But so protecting is important for the recreation that we have on them, the opportunities, but they really are the headwaters of the Illinois and the Smith. And so if there's mining on these creeks and rivers, that goes downstream to these other rivers that we love, and it affects the water quality, these other places we recreate. And and Priscilla, I haven't done Canyon Creek yet. Yeah, you guys did. And I mean, just getting into Canyon Creek, you have to drive up over this crazy pass that, like, even
a
Toyota
Tacoma. It's definitely a 4x4 road.
Yeah, this is no joke driving. You're like, normal truck isn't going to make it. I mean, you have to have a real off-road vehicle. And then to do Canyon, you park down by Josephine Creek, and then you hike up Canyon Creek as far as you want to, and then paddle down it. So this is not for the faint of heart. It's the river's like class 4, right? Like class 4 plus.
Yeah, I would say class 3-4 at the flows that we did it at. But if it had more water, I could see it turning into more of a class 4 run in sections. But it was a really fun adventure, and it was a pretty little canyon. So really cool area.
Yeah, that was probably the first descent. I mean, I know people have explored that whole area, but that is such a niche place and so hard to get to. I can't imagine anybody ever going there before.
Except for maybe the Knapp brothers. They seem to explore lots of stuff and not report on it.
They did, but that place is just so out there. You have to have an awesome car. You just can't get it. You can't get up there unless you have something that's, you can't be driving a little two-wheel drive truck. There's no way a Subaru is going to make it.
Oh no. Yeah. You need clearance and, and four-wheel drive for sure to get past some of those sections and some problem solving. I think we like brought some lumber with us and made some like little temporary bridges over some of the ruts just because they are so big. But it was fun. I love that kind of driving and those kind of trips. Just, I mean, to me, that's kind of the essence of Southern Oregon. You're always like trying to navigate these random roads and getting through mud and hiking and enjoying awesome whitewater. So yeah, it was a fun little treat.
The second time we went in that road to do Josephine Creek, just past where you guys would have gone, like if you keep going up the road from where you parked for Canyon Creek, we got a Toyota Highlander stuck in the mud
I could see that.
and spent two, three of us, we didn't have any, we broke our avalanche shovel digging it out.
Oh
And we
no.
spent 3 hours. I think Aaron's about to join us. I saw him. He kind of, he's trying to join in on
Okay.
this.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, hey,
I'm
Aaron,
here.
welcome. But we spent 3 hours digging out with our hands this car that we got stuck in the mud up there. And it was a Toyota Highlander of the V8. It was a legit vehicle. So it's definitely a vehicle adventure too.
Awesome. Well, I only have one kind of plug for news of the week. On November 1st, Next Adventure is bringing back their Paddle Film Fest. They're doing a little different version of it. It's Paddle Film Night, and it's going to be hosted at Base Camp Brewing. And I'm mostly excited about it because this year it's a fundraiser for American Whitewater and for Oregon Wild, both organizations which are working to nominate more wild and scenic rivers. And they are Piranha's donating a medium ripper, and
Wow.
they're doing a silent auction on it, and the proceeds are going to be a split between AW and Oregon Wild. So
Cool.
that'll be really fun.
Did you say
So if you
it's at base camp?
it is at Base Camp.
Oh, cool. That's an awesome place to do it, something like that.
And they've hosted some AW events before, and so they're a pretty good partner, like giving back to the community. So yeah, if you're around Portland area, Friday, November 1st, it's 6:30 to 11 p.m. or whenever they finish up. So come hang out and help support American Whitewater and Oregon Wild.
Is this a Priscilla Macy production? Are you involved in the in planning it?
I am.
Okay.
Not as much as I was in the previous film fest where I was kind of organizing the whole thing, but I am involved in coordinating this.
I noticed people have been submitting their films, and then somebody's been posting them on Facebook, and we have to hit like to vote for them. Is that how it works?
So this was not my idea. I like the idea of like revealing the winners at the end, and you don't really know what's been submitted, but this year, I think just for ease in judging and making it simple on their staff, you have to go to the event page and like the video that you like the most. So it's a little complicated, but whatever. I guess people are submitting videos, so that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. And I saw Scott, I watched Scott Michaels' video, which is pretty cool. It's long, but like it's really entertaining if you like watching
Oh, it's
rafting.
great. Oh, yeah.
His swim through, I think it's Stovepipe and the Little White
Oh my goodness, that's horrible. Yeah.
that could be an award-winning video on its own.
Absolutely.
It could just be that clip.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't figure out how to like it.
Oh, what? So if you go to the
Yeah.
event page, it's like PDX Kayaker Film Fest, and
I
then you
found
scroll
it.
down. Oh,
It
okay.
wouldn't let me like it.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'll try it again, but it's kind of a cool opportunity for us to watch some videos ahead of time and like them. And I mean, it is to me weird that we're gonna have seen the videos before the festival, but the festival is more about getting people together, like and hanging out with friends and catching up than sometimes actually watching the videos. So I don't, I'm thank you whoever's thank you Priscilla and everybody else for creating this opportunity for us to just hang out.
And that's always what it's been, just an excuse to hang out and watch paddling and go paddling that next weekend. So it should be fun. Well, is there any other news of the week before we move on to our topic?
That's it. Aaron, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. This is Aaron, who's done a bunch of podcast episodes with us a bit. Eric is off in Ireland right now, so he's taking a vacation from the podcast this week. And so thanks, Aaron, for joining in.
You bet. Always enjoy. It's fun.
So, yeah, our main topic of the week is talking generally about, you know, mental well-being on the river, whether it be if you're a whitewater paddler that does difficult trips, or if you're a multi-day raft guide where you spend summers in a close community of people and then have to reacclimate to the normal world afterwards. But I think there's been some interesting articles coming out about adventure athletes, and it's not a new thing that's coming out by any means, but just about how adventure athletes and those that do sports that are mentally taxing, physically taxing, and ends up sometimes causing some mental health issues around like depression or anxiety, that I think comes from just a byproduct of doing sports that are difficult and have consequence. And I think it's interesting because typically, at least in the United States, I think we tend to highlight all the positive aspects of adventure sports and maybe over glorify it, and not talk about some of the ways that some of these athletes can struggle and how we can talk about being healthier about it and being open to talking about it. So
cool.
Yeah.
Hey, when you talk about the articles, are you referring to the Scott Lindgren article that he did in Outside Magazine?
That was one of them. Yeah. And there was another one that I think I've mentioned this one before. Noria Newman was featured in, what was it? An REI article that someone wrote. And she just talked about how women are taught to deal with fear and how that affects them. And then there was another article that like specifically talked about adventure athletes and how they deal with mental health and sometimes how depression can affect them more so than others. And there's not necessarily great tools for them to deal with it because, you know, the average person or a psychologist that's not trained in, you know, adventure athletes, like they can't necessarily really understand some of the trauma and stress that they go through. So they feel like there's not a great outlet or community for them to deal with some of those pressures and issues. I can't remember the name of that article, but I thought I saw Jeff Calhoun repost it a couple months ago. And I remember reading it, and it may have been an older article, but I was like, yeah, that's a good reminder that we kind of need to be there for each other and check in with each other, especially when it's coming into the winter season where there's less sunlight and people are more prone to feeling down or having seasonal affective disorder or all those things. So
I'll try and find the Noria Newman article and put a link to it in the show notes. Same thing with Scott Lindgren article, which I thought was fantastic. It's not as much mental health, but it's more about his own struggles with some, you know, a brain tumor and also just getting older, you know, like as you get older, it's harder to paddle at that same level.
Right. Yeah.
So it was a really good article.
So, Priscilla, I hope you guys, I haven't read any of the articles, and maybe some of the people listening also haven't read them. And so I could use a little more, I guess, background on the articles. And like, in, are we talking about just like the super uber, like crazy extreme athletes? Are we talking about like the weekend warriors who go up and, you know, go paddle class 3 and class 4? Or what are we talking about in those, what were they talking about in those articles?
In these articles, it was more geared towards people. I would categorize it as paddling is more a part of their identity than a recreational activity, if that makes sense. So kind of what Scott Lindgren was talking about and explaining in his article, of course, he's a high level athlete as well. But beyond that, paddling was such a core piece of his identity that when he was not able to do it in the way that he was used to, it caused a lot of depression, and it resulted in, you know, some substance abuse and trying to figure out ways to cope with that part of his identity not being the same as how it used to be. And then also talking about just, you know, whitewater rafting guides, there's been some research and articles about how Grand Canyon guides are just so removed from the rest of the world when they're working a summer or a season on the canyon. And so they have this core group of people that they're used to interacting with. And it's such a close, supportive group typically, and they're in such a remote area just doing the same thing over and over again. When they have to reacclimate to the normal world outside of that closed community and closed physical space, they have a lot of issues with depression and trying to readjust to kind of working a normal job or going back to school and interacting with other people that don't understand that type of culture. So those were kind of the things.
Oh, okay.
And I'd say there's really two kind of different things. Like I know, I mean, I was never like a full-on awesome kayaker back in the day, but I was pretty good. And I know as I can hold my own. I was pretty good. I can hold my own. I went kayaking a few times. But I definitely know that there was a point, I think it was like my late 20s, I had a really bad swim in California. And that was, it was a run. There's a South Fork of the Tuolumne. I'd done it before, like 10 years before. I went back and didn't do very well. And it was this coming to terms with, I'm just older. I can't keep up with that same. And kayaking had been such a part of my identity. It took me a long time to get back into kayaking. Because it's really hard to go back and do it when, like, you're just not good.
So, Zach, you're in your late 20s and you're saying you're over the hill in your late 20s. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
I peaked
as a kayaker.
I peaked pretty early. I don't know when it was. It might have been my early 30s. It was still when I was living in California. Do you remember when I had that swim, Aaron?
I remember you talking about, like, before you even said the South Fork, I was like, oh, I bet this is South Fork Tuolumne.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm pretty sure that's the one. Yeah, I remember afterwards. Yeah, I remember you talking about it, and I definitely, your eyes were big, and it was like, and I think, though, that people have those big swims at different points in their career, and those are swims that taking the big swim, some people don't come back from it. It's Zach, to use like Top Gun, you know, that analogy, your favorite, one of your favorite movies of all time. You know, some people come back from things like that and some people don't. And I feel like I've seen a lot of people over the years take big swims at any point during their career and they don't come back from it. Or they have some sort of fatality or major accident on a trip they're on and then they don't come back from it. So I there's definitely that aspect of getting older. Definitely, you know, now in my 40s, I'll say definitely feel that and those concerns. But I think there's also that secondary issue of just having that big swim that's eye-opening and just like, oh my gosh. And that causes you to reevaluate and you don't feel that safety on the river that you did before.
Yeah. And so there's the mental aspect of having a big swim and you're like, oh, I could die doing this.
Yeah.
But this day was more just like, I just wasn't paddling like I used to. Like I went on the river kind of cavalier. I'm like, oh, I got this. This is just like, you know, easy class 5. I've done it before. I had swum before that bad swim. Like I had swum earlier in that day, just in a normal rapid and then missed an eddy above a portage and then went into a portage and swam pretty nasty.
Yikes.
So like, I think really it was just eye-opening to me. Like I am not, once I could paddle this stuff and it was a lot of fun and now I shouldn't even be in that place. And it's really hard. It was hard for my identity to be like, but that's who I am. I'm a kayaker who does cool stuff. Now I physically can't. A big part of it was I just wasn't taking care of myself. I wasn't like stretching. I wasn't like dedicating myself to kayaking in terms of practicing. I was just going, you know, when it was convenient and maybe not as much as I had earlier, but it was a rough time for me and, you know, just like giving up that part of my identity as a kayaker. And now, I mean, I'm super happy now just staying paddling class 3-4 and, you know, it's, I don't feel like it's as much my identity anymore, but I can, I get that. Sorry, Aaron.
No, totally. Sorry. I was just curious is like, was one aspect of it, like just this reality check. This is your perception of yourself. And then all of a sudden, whoa, I'm not in this state that I think I am. And like, it makes you question yourself in a lot of ways, like where else am I making these assumptions and I'm good to go and then I'm doing well with something or I'm okay here and I'm not. I mean,
and that, what have I done with my life? Sort of like, man, I've put a lot of my life into this kayaking thing and all of a sudden I'm just not that cool. And I was really embarrassed because the people I was paddling with, I didn't know them that well and I I made them think I was a good paddler, and I show up and I'm just a mess. It was actually mm-hmm. super embarrassing for them to clean up after me multiple times, you know, and that was hard for me to handle too. I wasn't used to being that person. So there's that aspect, which I think is hard, is like moving, like at some point, like kayaking, I think there's a few things. There's just like the living the adrenaline sports lifestyle, which I've never lived, like the Red Bull athlete. I don't understand that. There's the like hitting an age to where you're not as good as you used to be. And I think there's the separate like seasonal thing. Like when you work really hard with a tight group for 4 months and then everybody says goodbye and you're on your own, how that affects you as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, I can relate to or have had experiences with both of those. The more recent experience being over the past couple years, I had, you know, some similar experiences like you're talking about, Zach, is having this idea of how good I was at something or who I was and my identity as a whitewater paddler being deconstructed when I was in some bad situations, and then having to ponder and I guess have this dialogue internally of, well, do I want to keep paddling? I don't like being scared. Like, no, this is a part of my identity. If I lose it, like, what's my purpose? And this conflicting dialogue and trying, I guess, in my head, trying to be like, well, I'm just not good enough as a form of justification to not work harder. And then just saying like, well, I don't want to run hard whitewater because it's scary and it's consequential. But then kind of turning around with a lot of encouragement from Jacob to be like, well, you know, it might not be scary if you put in a ton of effort to practice so that you have a better skill set and a better like mental aptitude to make, you know, decisions that aren't putting you in a bad spot. And after spending, you know, a lot of time doing that, I'm able to approach paddling in a totally different way and be excited about running hard whitewater again, because I have confidence in my ability again, where I'm not wondering, oh, am I going to miss a move or miss a boof stroke or something like that. It's like I look at a rapid and I'm able to say, no, I'm 100% about this. And I'm running it because I want to, not because I'm pressured to, and I'm able to enjoy it again. So I think like deciding what you want to do with your paddling, whether it's in a kayak or a raft or whatever, and just fully committing to it and not being in this like in between of like pretending you want to paddle hard whitewater, but actually being scared and then not wanting to put in lots of hours of practice. Cause I think that's kind of where the danger comes in, is you just have to be honest with yourself about what you actually want to do and what your abilities are.
Yeah. And there's two different mindsets. There's the one where you're just feeling good and you're like, hey guys, let's go run this. And it's just really fun. And there's the mindset where you're not there and your friends are going and you're like, well, I'll go, but I'm going to be scared the whole time.
Right.
Or I'm going to be nervous at these three drops, you know, and I, you know, there's, and it's really fun when you just got it and you're on, and it's very not fun when you're tentative the whole time or you're paddling and you know, like 2/3 of the way down, there's a big drop you have to run and it's just not fun until you get past that drop. You know, the first 2/3 of the day is slightly terrifying.
Yeah.
Do you guys, if you know, there's like that big drop that's like scares you, like, you know, partway down, are you, for me, I find it helpful just to be like in the morning, like, oh, I'm planning to not run it. And when I get there, I'll take a look at it. But right now I'm not going to run. I'm just going to walk it. Mm-hmm. And if I'm feeling good when I get down there, I run it, but I have my mindset before and then I'm just going to walk that big rapid when I get there. If it bothers me at all, I'm just going to walk it when I get there. And some days I'll pull in there and I'll be like, yeah, I'm just going to walk it. Or I'll be like, oh, no, I'm going to go for it. But I feel like that angst all the way down there just doesn't, like you said, it makes your day not fun. And it's at least that's the tool I like to avoid that. I don't know. Do you guys do that ever?
I think it depends on the run. And I actually was talking this through with a few people earlier, is if I know a hard drop is coming up on a run that I've done before, or there's a lot of information about it, I'll typically be kind of like what you're saying, Aaron, is like, oh, I'm not going to run it. But if it calls to me when we get there, I might change my mind. Or if the situation's perfect, then I might change my mind. But like if I'm doing an exploratory run and I know we're about to come up on a gorge or a drop that we saw from satellite imagery or something like that, then I'm more excited about the possibility of running it, because I don't really know what it is, and I have no expectations totally. About it, which is kind of why I like exploratory boating better, as long as I know there's eddies and, you know, you can, looking at the terrain, you're able to get out of your boat when you need to. But yeah, it's like, if I'm putting on, you know, a run that I've done a bunch, or there's a ton of GoPro about it, I'm like, oh man, here comes that scary drop. Like, when's the eddy, guys? Like, I just did that on the South Feather in California. I was like, all right, where's the portage? And I was like all nervous about it. But if I didn't even know it was coming up, I would have just caught eddies the whole time, like I'd been doing earlier, and not even thought about it. So yeah, I think it's situational, but generally I try to like not say I'm going to run something just so that it takes the pressure off. And I've noticed that if I try to talk a big game or be cool and overcommit myself to running stuff, then it just makes me feel bad later on in the road, or feel like guilty or embarrassed when I don't run it, or I do run it and I make a mistake, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm. Yeah, I do that all the time too, Aaron, but sometimes you can't portage that rapid. Sometimes you're going to run like, I got to run that one. Or there's like, you plan on portaging the hardest one, but there's still a second hardest one. You know, like, I still got, you know, there's always a crux, you know, like an example would be like Cherry Creek. Like, I'm pretty sure if I ran Cherry Creek tomorrow, I would swim like 5 times and take out. Like, I just,
scary.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have that. Like, I don't think I'm paddling that level anymore where like, I would go into it saying I'm definitely portaging Lumsden, but I should probably portage Mushroom too. You know, like, do I also portage Lewis's? You know, what, it's a slippery slope once you start planning on portaging things.
Right. And I think you have to be really honest with your group before you put on, which I think is something that I have experienced, and also been a person that have done it to a group, is where you're like, yeah, I'm totally confident on this run. And then, you know, you decide you're the only person in the group that feels uncomfortable and decides to portage everything. And all of a sudden everyone's stuck in the dark, or everyone's cold, or, you know, like, I think you have to be really honest with how you're feeling and if you're nervous or what your general plan is before you all decide to embark on a river trip together, just so that, like, you know, for one, like, that creates a safer environment, and two, it creates a place where everybody knows where everybody's at before putting on, and it makes for a much healthier, like, relationship with your group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And adding to that, going back to Zach's Cherry Creek thing, and adding to that, a big part of it, and you guys talked about this earlier, is just like, you got to put the time in. I mean, it's a sport, it's an endeavor, and just like anything, if you're not practicing it, you're not going to be good. And I feel like there's this attitude by some people like, oh, to get better, you just got to go charge hard stuff. It's like, no, you just got to go practice making a, you know, whatever level you're at, making that rapid, those rapids harder than they need to be, and catching every real random eddy. And then when you can do that easily, then the next step up isn't that hard. And you do that all the way up. And by putting that time in, I mean, I feel like that's one of the big things I'm hearing in this conversation, is that, as we get older, I think we have less time to boat, and we still want to be able to boat the same stuff, but we can't get out there as often. Mm-hmm. And that's a big a roadblock to continuing to run that hard stuff. Is like, yeah, when I was in college, you know, we paddle all the time, but then I was like, I can't kayak in the winter anymore when I'm, you know, with my other jobs. Even when I started raft guiding more, I had less time to kayak, so my kayaking got worse.
Yeah,
you know, it's not just time though. Like, age is definitely a factor. Maybe that's my excuse right now, but I'm paddling a lot. Like, I'm kayaking 3 or 4 days a week right now.
Exactly.
I'm just not.
I mean, I'll say in your 40s, I think that's true. In your late 20s, I don't think that's true.
when I had that swim, you're right. I was used to be able to jump off the couch and go big, and I definitely realized I couldn't do that at some point. But like, yeah, there's age, but there's time paddling, but it's just age. Like, I'm trying to get back to where I can paddle the truss comfortably. And I'm going out a lot just to practice, and I'm pretty sure I can physically get down the truss right now. But I want to go and style it. I want to go and just have a fun time, hit everything where I want to hit it, not go and kind of beat her down. So I'm personally trying to get paddled as much as I can to get in that spot. And it's way harder now than it was 20 years ago.
So, Zach, when we were in our 20s, though, I remember those, some of those people paddling Cherry Creek. They were in their 50s.
I know. They were awesome. They're better than me. I always was like, I never thought it was a big deal. And now I'm like, that's incredibly impressive.
It's impressive. Yeah, as you get older, you have a lot more respect for that. You're like, wow, that on multiple levels. Because I think like one of the things that's weird in there, too, is like, even if you could do it last year, you don't know if you can do it the next year. You're like, can I still do this? Because there's going to be a time when I can't. And I don't want to find that out, you know, dropping into mushroom. Oh, crap. I am physically not able to do this anymore. And I think that's that little voice in the back of your head that makes it more challenging. When you're in your 20s, you're pretty confident. You're like, yeah, I could do that. Sure, whatever. No problem. Now you're like, I hope I could still do it.
I remember doing Cherry Creek with people that were older but had been kayaking much, and it would not go well. I just did multiple swims, exhausted, and I remember thinking to myself, I never want to be that old person who comes back and gets beat up. and that would definitely be me if I went now, for sure. So some people were, you know, remember that guy Larry who lived out of his van? He paddled Cherry Creek 50 times a year. You know, and he just paddled. So he's like 60. There were still a lot of 40 and 50 year olds going to the creek all the time too, but they were paddling a lot.
Yeah. Dennis Egan, wasn't he in his 50s?
Yeah. Yeah. But he started doing yoga specifically because he swam. I was with him at Mushroom. He swam one time and he got into yoga, which brought his kayaking back. He realized, you know, his paddling was being affected by his flexibility. And now he's like a grand yoga master.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Flexibility is, oh man.
Yep.
Yeah. I think if I could say, like, you know, I'm almost 30 and I don't have a lot of excuses for things, but I feel like Jacob and I have noticed so much that, like, we have to stretch a little bit every day to be comfortable in our kayaks and comfortable hiking. And it just makes such a big difference. And I've talked to a lot of paddlers and mountain bikers about that, like just do a little bit of stretching every day, like body weight exercises. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible how much just, you know, 10 minutes of that a day can make such a world of difference. Yeah.
So
just a little stuff.
Yeah. The flexibility is a huge part of it. Zach, I'm curious though, going back to your thing. I think when you were in your 20s, though, and not the time you got hammered running the South Tuolumne, but back when you were running it well, you were way more active than you are now, way more. And why I say that is, like, you work a full day on the river. Like, that's a lot of work. And, like, working Tuolumne trips back then before they had that new ramp, everyone was fit there. You were just so fit. And yeah, you're working the desk job now, and then you get on kayak for an hour or two a day, but that's not the same. That's not the same level of fitness.
That hurts.
I mean, it's true for all of us, but I feel like the difference, you know,
guiding the Tuolumne is a lot of rookie, right? It makes you physically fit. But back then I wasn't hitting the gym. I wasn't like doing P90X, you know, I was just like going kayaking, skiing and call it good. Now I like come home and do pushups and stuff. Like I never trained back then. I just went paddling.
Well, but I think that's the best step, but you're doing it all day. Like I look at I work Grand Canyon trips and, you know, I'm working with guys and women in their 60s. And this one woman, Lorna, I just work with, she's like, I don't know, she's just probably a little over 100 pounds and she's like 65 and it's almost impossible to keep up with her rowing downstream, but she just stays active all the time. It's not like she like trains and lifts weights or anything like that. She just stays active.
Yeah.
And she's always doing something active. She has an active lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I think you there's see something, that with people coming on the trips.
There's something, you know, the definitely. I was going to say there's definitely something with people, you know, just people that do jobs that involve labor or being like outside of a desk. Like I've had my physical therapist tell me a number of times, like desk jobs are what causes issues. And the older you get, the more, you know, if you're like most people, the more time you're spending at a desk, But, you know, if you're doing a job where, you know, like, say you're a farmer, where you're out and about all the time, even if you're not like lifting weights or going to the gym, just having, like you're saying, Aaron, that active lifestyle, like, that you're going to be way healthier than someone that works out once a week and spends 40 to 60 hours at a desk.
Okay, yeah. So you just described me, and I'm sitting at a desk right now.
And I know, me too.
I'm pretty sure we were talking about mental health in this episode.
I know.
My mental health is now dropped. I am now depressed in my lifestyle.
Desk jobs are the cause of a lot of mental health issues and physical pains. There is research to prove that. So I think, like, to bring it back around, if you are able to maintain a baseline level of fitness, I think it will help you, like, you know, if paddling's a part of your identity and you're struggling, like we were describing with, oh man, I can't paddle hard whitewater anymore, like maintaining a base level of fitness helps with that kind of cognitive dissonance of, like, I believe and I have been this person in the past, but now I'm not able to do these things anymore because I'm older, because I have to work more hours, because I have kids, whatever it is. So I think being realistic with what your capabilities are, and if, like me, you decide that you want to continue to paddle a certain level of whitewater, finding the time to commit to the training to be able to do it safely. You just have to reconcile, like, what it is you want to do so that you're not feeling depressed about not being able to achieve what you used to or what you hope to in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that maybe having paddling be a part of your identity is not a healthy thing. I think that having kayaking being a fun thing that you do is, but, like, if it's part of your identity, it could lead to issues down the road.
Right. And I think, you know, depending on what your career is and what you're able to do, but I definitely agree to a sense where it's like paddling's a part of my identity and Jacob's, and we're constantly trying to reconcile, like, having to have a job and not being able to go paddling like some of our friends that are able to travel and spend more time doing what they want to do. And that certainly causes conflict and depression, and it's like, you know, like, nobody really wants to spend a ton of time at a desk. They'd much rather be doing what they get joy from and what's fulfilling. I think it certainly is something. If you're not able to be someone who's able to paddle all the time or travel or be on all the trips you want to be, it certainly would cause some issues with feeling down or unfulfilled.
Yeah. And so in reading Scott Lingward's article, for me, it was really a good article. Like, it knowing somebody who is such a legend and just such a badass struggling with similar issues helped me a lot with my own, you know, having some of these issues as well. So I'd highly recommend it. It's a great article.
Yeah. And Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Aaron.
I was just going to say, when we're talking about the mental health stuff, one of the things that I think a lot about with all this is, like, how do you fill your emotional cup? You know, like, how do you feel good about yourself? And for, I think for a lot of us who like to boat and like to do outdoors.
Oh, did we just lose Aaron?
Uh-oh. I think so.
Aaron's calling in from Hawaii. So, his connection might be bad.
Yeah. I was going to say oh, there he's back.
Aaron, we missed all that. Your connection was bad. Oh, he's gone again.
Oh, no. Okay. So something I've realized I've really missed out on just because of where I live and how many paddlers are female. I've recently connected with a lot of whitewater paddlers that are female and done trips where there's been more female than men, or, you know, it's pretty equal. And there's definitely a different communication style and leadership style that happens when there's more women on the river. And what I've realized I've missed out on is talking about fear and talking about like decision making in the context of not being like, you know, masculine or having balls or that sort of thing, and just being like, yeah, this rapid's like pretty intimidating. Why don't we look at it together and make a decision? And I guess I feel like Jacob and I do that together a lot. But then when you're in the context of a group and being the only female with a lot of men, you know, it makes it feel more like a competition and more like I'm not doing my best if I'm not running all the hard rapids with them. Like I feel left out. But when you change the context to having other women and they're like telling me that they're feeling the same way about a rapid, and their decision making is similar to mine, I no longer feel alone. So I think it's really important to have people that are quote unquote like us, you know, on the river, so that you can just be like, oh, right, like our decision making is a little bit differently than men or that sort of thing. It's just it's a very inclusive community in general. But I think I was never really told how important it is to paddle with other girls every once in a while. And I didn't really understand how much value that would have until I had the opportunity to do it.
Hmm. How often do you paddle with just women?
More, well, starting this summer, it's been a lot more because I've been going up to the gorge and doing kind of the releases where, you know, there's just more people. And the gorge has a lot of women paddlers now, which is awesome because, you know, the rivers are accessible and there's lots of gear and there's rafting companies and you can learn.
I would almost say 50% female kayakers here. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but it
seems that way.
I mean, I'm not paddling super hard stuff, and so maybe it's different there, but like for like the white salmon and the hood and that kind of thing, it's usually half women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I think it's great, but I've just recently connected with some other female paddlers that kind of enjoy doing like the off the beaten path stuff, and we've just kind of like connected over social media, and we kind of knew who each other were just from social media and whatnot, and then we finally got to paddle together, and it was just like, you know, we had a lot of the same struggles on the river, and it was really neat to talk about that. And to understand like that, oh, I'm not alone, you know, like this is a totally normal thing to be feeling. And, you know, we'd talk about our experiences with being like, you know, an all guy crew and feeling pressure to do certain things or feeling guilty because we were afraid of rapids. And, you know, generally, of course, this is a very generalization, is like men typically don't like express or feel like, you know, they feel like it's not appropriate to express fear or like, I guess like men are taught to be more stoic when it comes to adventure sports. And like Noria's article talks about, this isn't a positive thing, but women are often taught to be more fearful, or that it's okay. Like it's culturally okay for women to be more fearful of things and more hesitant. And I think there's a healthy medium between two of those things, is like, it's like, you know, it's not okay to be fearful, but you should have some level of like reasoning and fear when it's appropriate, but you shouldn't be so stoic that you're not able to recognize like those feelings and make a good decision. So,
yeah. I think a lot of times I'm scared, but I don't want to show it to be macho.
Right. Exactly. In paddling with women, it's totally opposite. It's like, I don't want to express it when I'm with a group of all guys. But then if I'm paddling with a bunch of girls, we don't just stand at the lip of a hard rapid and be like, oh, I'm scared. But we'll be like, oh, my gosh, this is a really big rapid. I want to poop my pants. And then we'll be like, all right, like, let's look at it. Like, who wants to run it? And like, all right, who's going to do safety? It's like, you know, there's a lot more communication generally and a lot more like checking in with each other and like mm-hmm. cheering each other on and celebrating, which is really fun.
Do you want to touch on the seasonal
issues at all?
Did you? Can I jump back in here, guys?
Oh, hey, you're Aaron. Back.
Welcome back.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry, I got cut. Somehow I got cut off right as I started talking. I don't even know if you heard anything I said. Did I get cut off right away?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. Because the season.
Something about an emotional cup. That's all we heard.
Yeah, emotional tank. Yeah, no, the seasonal stuff. It's perfect. This is what it's all about. So it's a great chance for me to like say this again. I feel like when people talk about like, oh, hey, at the end of the season, like they're blaming like rafting or being on the river as being a problem. And I wonder if it's actually like it's a solution. And we talk about like ways to fill your emotional cup, like how like going boating fills my emotional cup. And that like when I was in college, it got me through the week because I'd go on the week and go paddle. And then I'd be cool for the week. And then I need to get out again and kind of rejuvenate. And so I think for a lot of people, being on the river fills their emotional cup. And then you talk about the end of the season or you get off a long trip or whatever. And then like, if you don't have other ways to fill your emotional tank, yeah, you're going to feel depressed. You're going to feel bummed out. And I feel like it gets that activity gets blamed when really the activity is helping and versus we just don't have, we have to have other things outside of that that are other ways to fill our emotional cup. Is that making sense what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really good way to frame it. And I think for like reflecting back on when I wasn't a hard shell kayaker, I didn't do like winter boating or fall boating or whatever. And I was only able to be on the river in the summer when I was guiding. I think a lot of it was related to that is like, wow, I'm not spending any time on the river, which is what, you know, fills my emotional cup. To use the same analogy. So I have, you know, 9 months of the year where I'm trying to fill that void with something else. You know, if you're a student and you're just doing like seasonal guiding or whatnot, and you're not, you know, a seasonal winter guide somewhere. So it's like you have all this fulfillment for 3 months or 4 months, and then you go to the majority of the rest of the year where there's less sun, the weather's a little more drab generally, and you're not able to be on the water with, you know, your river community and all that sort of thing. So that can certainly lead to feelings of, you know, not feeling great.
I was always stoked when winter, like ski season started. I'm like, oh yes, it was like the time in between. It was the yeah. like September, like after the river season, before the ski season started, that was always hard, you know, going from being very valued and you know, when you're guiding, the guests put you in this high, you know, they think you're so great. And so like people looking up to you, and then you go back in the real world, you go to 7-Eleven, the guy's like, what do you want? You know, right. So I think there's
you're
like,
no longer a god.
And you're no longer valued or have like this big support community, I think is part of the issue. Until, you know, ski season started, then you'd make your ski friends are back and you're going out skiing all the time. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're being rad on powder and that went away for me at least.
Yeah.
And I know even for me as a company owner, I go through a time every year in the fall because I'm so needed all summer. I work really hard and sometimes I'm like, oh, I just need a vacation. But also like everybody constantly needs my attention. I answer questions, I do things. And all of a sudden I check my phone and nobody needs anything. And it's like a sense of emptiness all of a sudden. Like I keep checking my phone looking for being needed and it's gone. And I have to like readjust to not being, you know, not being engaged with everybody.
Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting. I feel like the fall is a time to like catch up. You're just like, oh my gosh, I haven't done, there's so much stuff I haven't taken care of. And I love the fall. I just like, oh, just like to get, take a breath and be like all that stuff that I needed to be take care of this in the summer that I couldn't take care of, you know, like just different paperwork and just different things you've like let slide. You're like, okay, now I can get all this stuff done that I need to get done. Catch up with people you don't get to talk to in the summer. That's interesting. You know, it's interesting hearing you guys talk about it because I definitely like look forward to the fall. I look forward to the end of the season. And I don't. Maybe I'm just weird and antisocial and just like happy to have some time.
I'm at that point now. Like I'm digging catching up with things now. There was just a 2 week period in the season. The season just ends abruptly. Where I just kept looking at my email, expecting something, somebody needing something, and there was almost an emptiness when I wasn't there. You know, I noticed myself. I'd go to dinner and like while I'm waiting for somebody, I would keep checking my phone for like an emergency or something I have to solve. I'm like, why do I just keep looking at my phone? And it's because my interaction with a lot of my guides is through my phone, and I just that was just gone. And then, but now I'm Aaron, at this point, like, I'm just like, cool. Like, I'm definitely in the catch up phase and super happy things are slow. But there's definitely, for me, a 2 or 3 week period every year where I have to readjust.
Yeah. I think, you know, everyone processes everything differently. You have different personalities, you different, like, you know, I'm more of an extrovert. So for me, when I was guiding, or at the end of like this summer, when I've been driving all around to the releases and hanging out with lots of people, I'm kind of sad because I don't have that all the time. But for Jacob, he is an introvert. And so, like, you know, he needs to recharge from those kind of weekends. Otherwise, he just gets totally overwhelmed. But I think, you know, just in general, checking in with your paddling friends or your raft guide buddies and, you know, maintaining that community is important to a lot of people. And, you know, I know when I was in college and I would hear from some of my raft guiding friends, whether it was just on Facebook or they're like, I'm in town, want to hang out or whatnot. It was always something that kind of made me happy and made me remember, like, oh, boating isn't that far away. Like, you know, my community is not that far away. I'm not alone, that sort of thing. Or if it's like skiing or climbing, like, you know, maintaining your ability to interact with your friends and your different communities in that way. And also, if you're feeling like really down, don't like be afraid to go like seek out a therapist or something like that, because it's really helpful to talk about that with someone, and for someone that can tell you healthy ways to deal with it or ways that you can revise your schedule or whatnot, so they can kind of deal with some of that.
Yeah. Speaking of people who have, you know, the problems at the end of the season, and I get the feeling, like, at least on the Grand Canyon, that, like, in particularly historically, when you look at it, a lot of people gravitated there who I think did have problems, who had problems with depression and had these different problems. Like, they're used to the generation before, so there are a lot of Vietnam vets who came to work on the canyon. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if people are drawn to those types of, that type of living situation, because it does give them a reprieve and a break. And so, you know, like, we seem prone to that at the end of the season too. Is that maybe another reason? It's just like the type of people who are drawn to those jobs long term are people who do better in that environment and struggle more in the other environment.
Yeah, I would generally agree with that.
And this has been an issue. We're just touching the surface of an issue that's been going on for a long time. And through those issues and problems with mental health, it's the Whale Foundation in the Grand Canyon, right, Aaron?
The Whale Foundation. Yeah,
is an organization that helps guides in the Grand Canyon, you know, help deal with some mental issues. And in Idaho, the same thing. The Redside Foundation is for Idaho guides. So, I mean, it's enough of a problem where strong organizations have come up to support people. So, you know, if you're in either of those communities, you have those resources to access to.
Yeah. And those resources aren't just about like, oh, I'm struggling like mentally. It's also like resources like, hey, I'm trying to switch over out of this career. How do I do that? Mm-hmm. Like, the Whale Foundation is really trying to expand how they assist people. So trying to help people who are like, yeah, I've been a river guide for 20 years and I want to switch. How do I do that? How do I make the finances of this work so that I'm actually making a living and being able to survive on the wages I'm making? So they're really trying to expand the resources.
Oh, I think we lost Aaron again.
Oh,
yeah. No. We should probably wrap this one up. Aaron, we keep losing. We should maybe wrap this one up.
But we'll post links to both of those organizations in the show notes. I think that is a good point to wrap up this conversation. Obviously, we haven't even dived into a lot of these topics. They're very expansive. But for time's sake, we can move on to what? Gear of the week?
Gear of the week.
All right.
I can go really quick. I just got a GoPro Hero 8. The newest thing. I haven't used it yet, but it's pretty cool. It doesn't have like, it's just a camera. There's no like case for it. And the things that attach to the helmet or whatever just kind of like flip down. And so anyway, I'm going to take it down the river today and check it out. But
nice.
The build quality is amazing. It just feels really good. It just feels professional. Your GoPros feel kind of chintzy. Mm-hmm. This thing feels legit. So I'm excited about it.
Does it have interchangeable batteries?
It does. Yeah,
Oh,
it
nice.
does.
Nice.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, everything I read about it says it's super high quality. And there's a deal where you can trade in an old camera and get $100 off.
Oh,
So
nice.
I sent in my GoPro 3, and which had is partially broken, and got the
Nice.
Yeah, and my last GoPro, I was gonna take video of the sweep boat this summer, and I had it on a SUP paddle on the sweep, all set up to take video. And the second rapid, it hit a log, and it launched my GoPro 20 feet behind me into the river.
Oh no.
So yeah, that was a bummer. So I'm gonna try to be more careful with this one.
See, my gear of the week is it's called PB Blaster, and it's just this bolt loosening penetrating oil lubricant. And I've been working on my car the last few weeks, and it's a really old car, so getting a lot of the nuts and bolts loose has been a big pain in the butt. And someone recommended this, and it is insanely awesome. You just like spray it on the nuts or bolts, and it penetrates into where it attaches and breaks away like rust and corrosion, and then lubricates it. So it went from like having super stuck bolts to being, after letting it soak for like a day, just being able to loosen it with like a breaker bar. But I thought it would be a cool thing to put on the podcast, because if you're, leave your raft frames outside and then you want to adjust something on it or replace something, those bolts are usually wicked hard to get off. So I thought this would be a great tool for that, for any hardware related to rafting or kayaking or trailers. And it's not very expensive.
Yeah, I was wondering where you're going
Nice.
with that. I'm like, is this an auto show? But
Nope.
I get where you're going
I
with it
was
now.
like, I'm gonna keep a stock of this because it will work for many things.
Nice. All right. And so my gear of the week. Are you guys familiar with the Free Fly Sun hoodie?
Yeah.
It's You guys use it. Like, it's partially bamboo. And I'll say, now that I'm living on Hawaii, it's like so humid here. Like, I just sweat all the time. And like, my synthetic sun hoodies, they just get stinky so fast. And the bamboo one is amazing. I appreciate it before in the desert environment, the dry west and stuff like that. But out here in the humidity, it's been a lifesaver. Like, I can wear it and go walk to the grocery store, and I don't smell disgusting by the time I get there. Like, it's fantastic. So,
Wow.
and it's UPF 50. So,
Oh, nice.
okay, hold
yeah.
on. So this is the second time I've heard of this bamboo hoodie from somebody now. Again, why is it better than that? It doesn't smell.
Well,
Yeah.
it's kind of like wool. Like, the wool doesn't smell the way the
Yeah.
synthetics do. The synthetics, for some reason, just pick up the smells better. And I think, like, bamboo, it's kind of like, it's got natural, like, stuff that
Wait, it's
kills
made of
stuff, right?
bamboo.
Like
It's actually made of
yeah.
bamboo. Isn't bamboo wood?
Yeah, but
It's
you
not
can
just,
like
yeah,
make
it's
fiber out of
wood.
it.
Yes. Yeah, it's bamboo fiber, Zach. And I think it's mixed in with some polyesters, but it's a blend. And so, yeah, it's,
Okay. All
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
They, I,
I've
I
heard of.
will say the one problem with them is they don't hold up that well. They do wear out a lot faster than the
Huh.
synthetic ones.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's
Can I
kind of
ask
how
you?
wool is too. Is it like
Yeah.
the synthetic ones end up stinking more because they're meant to not like absorb water so that you are able to stay warmer for longer. But the issue with that is when you wash it, it also doesn't absorb water. So whatever bacteria or stink you have, like in your polypropylene shirt, like will not get out. But and then also if you have wool or bamboo or any natural fiber, it'll absorb water, but then it'll also degrade faster. But it doesn't stink as much.
Because that's funny you say that, because I definitely noticed with the bamboo hoodie, when it gets wet, it gets soaking wet, and it just, like,
Yeah.
it stays wet forever. Like, it
Yeah.
takes so long to dry them out, which is, in the desert, it's great, but yeah, other places it can not be so nice. Wow, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to hear somebody else. I heard this from somebody else separately that they're pretty cool. So I'm gonna check one out. I have one random question. I don't understand why hoodies have SPF or UPF. Like, they're hoodies, they cover the skin. Is the point that, like,
No,
if
but
you wear a normal hoodie, the sun still gets through?
Yeah, not all materials are made the same. A lot of material is like UPF like 10 or something like that, or even sometimes less.
I just assume if I'm wearing a shirt, that's sun coverage. And you're saying the sun gets through most shirts.
No, yeah, like I have all these marks on my forearms from guiding down in Chile, and I just used to wear regular shirts, and it didn't protect my arms that well. I had these UPF. And I had these UPF things that covered my hands, you know, like the sun paws.
Yeah.
And my hands don't have any spots on them, but my arms have spots all over them. And so, yeah, not all, you know, and then the materials, it's a question of how long they hold up. And some of them, they like do a spray coating on them to make them UPF, and others, it's the material itself. So you have to check it out.
I think that UPF thing is a marketing scam. It's a shirt.
Zach, you're all about getting different technology. There's these things that test the fabric to see how much light comes through it. And so you could buy one of those and start testing different fabrics if you wanted to.
I think you're one person data set. Your one person data set doesn't count. And I think UPF is just a marketing scam.
Exactly. Totally. That's why we need the tester. Buy one of those testers to actually test the materials for ourselves, and it would be interesting to see how they degrade over time. How long is it still UPF 50? Like, can I wear it for a week? Can I wear it for two seasons? I've actually started to wear two of the bamboo shirts when I'm down in Arizona, just one over the other, just to have better coverage, and it makes a huge difference. I don't feel like the burning through the shirt at all that way.
All right, that's insane. This has been fun.
Yep.
It's been a good one.
Well, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for our next episode. And Zach, we have a new mail, don't we?
We do. Yeah. If you made it this far through the podcast, first of all, thank you. We're just over an hour. And our new email is questions@rivertalkpodcast.com. Our old email was just not, people were confused by it. It was the River Talk and not River Talk. Yeah. So I made the simple one. It's just questions@rivertalkpodcast.com. And yeah, we love the questions and comments. It's fun to talk for us to hear the people listening. And it's also just nice for us to have things talk about.
Yep.
All right.
Well, thanks for listening, and get out on the river. Gonna float me into a new state of mind. I'm on Chattahoochee on Rio Grande, the Allegheny.